Happy Friday! We are 2 days away from the start of the 2015 baseball season. Yes! Celebrate!
Woo!
Thank you, Scott. Al, celebrate!
Woo!
There we go. Thank you, Ric Flair.
That was not the least bit spontaneous, Al.
It was worked for me.
Woos have to be spontaneous.
I missed the train for that.
You know what?
The spontaneity train.
Don't worry about it. We're going to be very helpful today on this Fantasy Baseball Podcast, talking in-season strategies, plus we got some news out of a few rotations. The A's, the Rockies, and the Braves, and Diamondbacks. Updates there on who's in and who's out. But, yeah, it's going to be mostly a strategy show, plus a lot of emails. Got some very good ones, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Don't forget to stay with us once the season starts. Every single day we'll have a podcast. We'll tell you who to pick up. We'll tell you who to drop. Who to trade for? We'll give you FanDuel advice. You know, we have a very good informative podcast. You will enjoy it. Happy holidays to everybody celebrating. I know there are a lot of people celebrating holidays this weekend, so have fun. How about Archie Bradley, huh?
How about that Archie Bradley coming out of oblivion into the Diamondbacks rotation?
Pretty cool.
Trevor Cahill's cool.
On the Braves.
Yeah,
I'm assuming that's a non-factor for you guys in fantasy.
Not for me.
I wouldn't say a complete non-factor. I mean, it's not clearly not drafting him in mixed leagues, but he's a SPARP.
Okay.
And a former All-Star who's still young enough to recapture that potential, and I assume the Braves feel confident he can under their tutelage.
And Archie Bradley, a top 10 pick a few years ago, a top prospect, now not officially, right? In the Diamondbacks rotation?
I don't know if it's officially, but seen it reported that he's in.
All right, he's in. So,
I think that was pretty much what precipitated the Cahill trade.
Right. Yeah. But okay, so what kind of leagues are you adding Archie Bradley in? What do you expect from him? Who might you drop for him?
I'd add him in any league.
Did you drop Kevin Gausman for him?
I would, yeah.
I wouldn't.
Really?
I wouldn't. Yeah, I guess I'm still a little gun-shy on Bradley, and so that means that Scott's going to have him in all these leagues, and when he busts out, Scott will have him, and I won't. But, I believed in Gausman a month ago, and I still don't believe in Ubaldo Jimenez. I think Gausman will get his shot sooner or later, and I'm going to stick with where I was a month ago, which is that I'd much rather have Gausman in my rotation than Archie Bradley.
Well, no, I mean, if Gausman had a starting job, it'd be a different story, but in the hope of him regaining a rotation spot at some point mid-season, you know, I might still have a shot at him then, except maybe in leagues with Allen.
Well,
but I wouldn't have a shot at Bradley at that point.
Now, did the Orioles, and I apologize if it has been announced and I missed it, but did the Orioles announce that Jimenez has beaten him out? Because I'm just going on kind of the momentum of the situation. I have not seen anything to the effect that Gosman's out of the rotation.
I haven't seen anything official either, okay. But
it does look
that
right.
way. Yeah, it does look that way.
How about Kendall Graveman or Archie Bradley?
I'll take Bradley. No, I'm sorry. I'll take Graveman.
And I will too, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
There are question marks with Bradley. I mean, he had big-time control issues last year, which is why he didn't get called up like we all thought he would at this point. Last year, we thought he was going to make his debut at some point. But he had a very good spring, and in and of itself, that's not enough to think he's over those issues. But obviously, it's a good sign for a player with a lot of upside.
Last one, Ervin Santana or Archie Bradley?
I'm thinking in a shallower league, I'd take the upside of Bradley. You
know? I would too, actually, because I had plenty of opportunities to draft Santana in all my leagues and didn't take that opportunity once. So, yeah, I would go for the upside.
Pittsburgh acquired Hunter Morris, a first baseman from Milwaukee, for a player to be named later. They've actually already decided on the player. He just doesn't have a name yet, so they're going to sit down with him and
name him.
Name him, yeah. But does this matter at all?
NL only. I mean, that's a nice situation for Morris. So for him, I'm glad to see it. He's sort of stalled at AAA, but I think there's some potential there, and there's I think decent opportunity for him in Pittsburgh at some point this year.
He would be but he's a lefty, so. Mm-hmm. He wouldn't be a platoon with Peyton.
Yeah. That would be if Alvarez was terrible or Josh Harrison got moved around and Alvarez went back to third, something like that.
But wouldn't they go with Andrew Lambeau before they went with Morris at first base?
I could see. Yeah, I would think Lambeau certainly would be ahead of him in the on the depth chart. But Yeah, it seems like a little more opportunity there than
in
Milwaukee, where they seem committed to Lind.
Right.
Notes are boring, so let's go through these quickly. Snooze fest. Kendall Graveman and Drew Pomeranz are officially in the Oakland rotation. MLB.com reports Eddie Butler has the inside track to be in Colorado's rotation. If Archie Bradley is a 7 on the addometer, where is Eddie Butler?
Like a 4, 3.
Okay.
2-1.
2-1.
About 3.
What if I started rapping after that? It's like 4, 3, 2, 1. I just busted.
I would love to hear that.
I wouldn't. Nobody wants that. It would probably be about geography, and it would be all wrong. Rusne Castillo was sent to AAA. Not a surprise.
Now, this isn't rap, but I realized yesterday that the Yankees rotation, at least the first four, kind of goes nicely to the tune of Kokomo.
Tanaka.
Pineda. Something, something. That rhymes with Pineda. And then Sabathia. Who am I forgetting now?
Adam Warren?
No, between them.
Oh, Nate Evaldi?
Yeah, Sabathia, Evaldi.
Evaldi. Yeah, okay.
It needs work.
One thing about it.
Yeah.
Tanaka, Pineda.
It starts well.
Yeah, it does. What did I have that going with last year? Remember?
Yeah, I don't remember.
It was excellent.
The Rockies lineup or something?
No, that was the Tulo Cargo.
Helto.
Now, all right, I'll come back to the Kokomo thing because I had a really good one. All right. Domingo Santana. Who I want to add you. Domingo Santana. Okay.
I think it was
to
that sick
my
that
roster
week.
In Roto. Drop in Gio Soto. That's what it was. Okay, anyway. Nick Markakis expects to play opening day. Oh, back to the Rusne Castillo thing. So I did my big daily league draft last night.
Oh.
And this is, I don't know if I made the right choice or not, but I didn't take Rusne Castillo. I didn't.
That's always the wrong choice.
I didn't take. But here's the thing, in a league like that, your bench matters more because you're actually going to be putting those bench players in your lineup when your other guys are off. So this is a learning experience for me. Mm-hmm. I wasn't sure how to approach guys that I can't put on the DL, that I just simply have to stash on as a bench player, 5-person bench. And lose an opportunity to sub guys in and out in a daily league.
So what did you get instead of Rusne Castillo? What round was it, and what did you take instead?
I mean, I gave you my 5 starting outfielders are Matt Kemp, Yasiel Puig, J.D. Martinez, Melky Cabrera, and Steve Pierce. So let's say I took Steve Pierce like a round later or something. And then in that case, Adam Eaton would have been my starting outfielder, and Castillo would have been on my bench.
I like Pierce a lot too. I think it would have been nice if you could have taken Castillo and Pierce the round later and used Pierce until Castillo arrived. And
but you see what I'm saying? I would have been a man.
I see what you're saying, but I play in a league with daily lineups, and particularly for somebody like Castillo, who I think we're expecting to be up in April, all of us, right? At some point in April, he's going to be up and playing.
I don't know. I don't necessarily agree. I think it strictly depends on Shane Victorino.
I don't think there's going to be that much of an impact him not playing that handful of games that some other player who actually is up would play.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll see how it goes, and hopefully I'll be able to, you know, provide some good insight on the podcast, the Daily League. And I think, for example, position eligibility is big. You know, you get a guy like Marcus Semien in a league like that who eventually you'll be able to move to shortstop, third, or second. That could be very helpful. Nick Markakis, as mentioned, expects to play opening day. Curtis Granderson was hit by a pitch in the leg. Doesn't seem serious. Daniel Murphy is expected to be ready for opening day. Justin Verlander is going on the DL. Could pitch by April 12th. I was wondering if maybe for FanDuel, the first time you see John Lester and Matt Harvey, Lester's going to be... Is he Sunday night?
Yes.
So there probably isn't even FanDuel on Sunday night. It's only one game, so never mind that. But Harvey, 90 to 100 pitches in his first start, just to keep in mind, since you're picking from every eligible player, maybe you want to back off with that. Plus, I think he's facing the Nationals, so that could be tough in Strasburg. Carlos Gomez, day-to-day with a hamstring injury, and Yasiel Puig and Howie Kendrick collided last night. They are expected to be fine. In-season strategies. I put some on paper. We don't have to talk about them, so this is your segment. But in case we run out of ideas, I can chime in. What do you guys want to tell people to do in-season? The floor is yours.
Well, I think what you have here at the top actually is a perfectly fine place to start, which is to be aggressive on the waiver wire. And
there seems to be some disagreement in the room about how aggressive people should be on the waiver wire, which is why I wanted to start with it.
Okay. Well, and you know, I would like to be more like Scott in this regard. No, because I mean, I've watched you play over the last 5 years, and this is where you tend to dominate leagues, and so I've seen the value in it.
Sure, I'll take that. That's a nice compliment. Thank you, Al.
It's true. I mean, I do it too. As you guys see, I make a lot of moves.
I've
already made a lot of moves. I picked up Billy Burns. I picked up Archie Bradley this morning. You know, so I don't know how many of them pay off, but the point is, don't drop. There are guys on your roster that are expendable. Be aggressive with those expendable roster spots.
And I was actually worried for a while there. I had a run of really good drafts. I felt like where. You know, I was looking at my bench, and for example, I was noticing this with Zach McAllister. He's a guy I've been hyping within the last week or two. I've kind of gotten on my radar late in spring training here after these drafts were done, and the leagues where he was still available, I was trying to figure out how I could add him on my roster, and I couldn't because there was nobody I felt comfortable dropping. But this most recent draft we had yesterday was the shallower format, head-to-head points, 21-man rosters. And I don't know what's happened to the player pool here recently. I think there's such a high number of players beginning the year on the DL that the last three rounds or so, I feel like, was players we hadn't been drafting at all 2 weeks ago. And those were... more expendable types, like Willie Peralta, I think, was my last pick, and I'm, whatever. I can take him or leave him.
Right.
Well, some of it's the player pool. Some of it is that this is a league where there's only two DL spots.
Yeah.
And guys like Smiley and Minor were going, I think, later than they've gone in our other drafts.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been one to take either of those guys in various drafts, and I passed on them because I already had two injured guys.
Yeah, no, I did
roster,
too.
So I think there was a lot of that going around.
Yeah. I would guess the majority of people listening draft later in the game when probably they're not going to face that situation. They're going to have players who, like I said, you can take them or leave them because there's not – they're assured like – they're kind of just middle of the road, and there's not really upside beyond that, and that's the kind of players that you don't need to protect. You need to protect the players everybody else is going to be looking to grab. Like Archie Bradley is a perfect example of that discussion we were having. Nobody's in on Kevin Gausman right now because he doesn't have a job, or at least it doesn't look like he's going to. Everybody's going to be in on Archie Bradley now. Maybe in the long run, Gausman ends up being better than Bradley, but it's too hard to predict that at this point, so you might as well go for the player who you're at greater risk of losing and missing out on the opportunity altogether, which would be Bradley.
And here's the thing I want to say about that, because I was going to make the exact same point. I think that Bradley versus Gausman thing illustrates the difference that we still have. And I think if you're going to take the strategy, that Scott, that you're talking about, you have to be 100% committed to it. So, if you're going to – or for me, for example, I mean, I want to speak for you, but I do think Gausman will be better than Bradley this year.
Mm-hmm.
There's that question of opportunity, but I think Gausman will have his opportunity, and he will be better and be more productive. But I could be wrong about that. And yeah, I mean, if you kind of read the other owners in your league and read what's going on kind of in fantasy, people are not going to be in on Gausman generally right now. But the thing is that you have to be 100% committed all season long so that, you're ready to dump Bradley when he doesn't pan out, or if he doesn't pan out, you're ready to pounce on Gausman, you're ready to pounce on, pitcher X, whoever that may be, that emerges out of nowhere. I don't know, TJ House has a great season that nobody saw coming.
Right.
You have to be on it every day.
Yes, and I will say that the big caveat here is league depth, league size. Like, you... you know, in an AL only league, you might not be making these types of moves. So you don't want to drop an established guy necessarily.
Absolutely.
To take a flyer on someone who could just be a complete dud after, you know, one or two hot starts.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to make sure you're in a league where there are going to be enticing guys on the waiver wire and your roster spots are more expendable. You know, the back end of your roster is more expendable. It's probably not that way in AL only or NL only leagues or deeper mixed leagues.
And the thing is, I remember this came up early last season. Justin Smoak, the hot start he got off to, I think he homered three times in the first two games or something. And, you know, I was all about picking him up because, hey, this is a guy who used to be a top prospect and maybe this is the year. And I was not about picking him up. And Al was right about Justin Smoak. But if we'd done the same exercise with JD Martinez a few weeks later,
right?
You know, I would have ended up with the stud outfielder the rest of the season, and Al wouldn't have. So.
And I picked up James Paxton after I saw him make one start last year. Remember what I said? I came in, I said, I fell in love with a lefty last night. I saw him, I was like, I need this guy on my team. I picked him up. So honestly, for me, could be one good start is all I need to pick somebody up because I don't want to be the moron who didn't pick him up and then he ends up being really good. But you can't be dropping anybody that is too valuable.
Yeah, at the same time, if you do, you got to know where the line is.
Yes.
Because if you, I mean, there will probably be five or six pitchers who are great their first time through the rotation that are unowned. And if you're adding all of them, well, you're probably dropping somebody who you can't be dropping.
And if that's what we're here to help with, obviously, we'll try to sort that out for you.
And just to get, you know, circle that back into the Gausman-Bradley discussion, you know, I would like to pick up Archie Bradley. Of course, at this point, you know, maybe too late in some leagues. But it's not going to be Gausman that I'm going to be dropping.
Yeah.
For him. You know, it is going to be the Irvin Santana types.
Last thing here. It changes a little bit with FAB. How do you manage your FAB dollars, your free agent acquisition budget, when it comes to this? You know, it's let's assume you have $0 bids. I've kind of found that I spend most of my money in the first, out of a 26-week season, first 17, 18 weeks. Then after that, it's much easier to get guys for cheaper. I have kind of found that, you know, people lose interest if they're out of the standings or
I haven't necessarily had that experience.
I'd probably just make fewer roster moves later in the season because early on in the season is when I'm taking more gambles with guys who are coming out of nowhere.
Well, early in the season there's more unknowns.
So
as the season goes on, the picture becomes clearer for every player, and you do have some guys who pop in the middle of things like JD Martinez last year. But the beginning of the season is where nobody really knows what's going on, and so it's worth taking bigger risks.
So how do you manage your FAB budget?
Yeah. There's a difference, I think, but a big difference between a daily transaction with a FAB budget and weekly transactions. Like, there are some leagues where players are only available to be picked up once a week, and those are usually FAB leagues. And the bidding is a lot more competitive, obviously. In the daily ones, you know, you could probably just throw $2 or $3 at a guy, assuming you're acting the very next day. But in leagues where everybody's had a week to catch up on everything, you could go through that budget pretty quickly if you're not careful. But the flip side of that is, well, you would have had the rest of the week to figure out that Justin Smoak was going to kind of fall off. So I kind of feel like it takes care of itself in the weekly versus daily thing. But I think just generally speaking, I am a little more cautious when it's weekly bidding because there's more people in on the bidding, you're going to have to bid more.
Sure. So let's talk about two-star pitchers and how you guys go about streaming two-star pitchers.
Well, okay, this week is a little bit different because there really aren't that many to stream. But, yeah, in a more typical week, that's a key part of my roster management every week. And actually, you know, I like to try to, if at all possible, kind of be 2 weeks ahead. Because sometimes competition could be very fierce for those two-start guys. And, you know, if you miss out, you may want to, you know, if you can stash somebody, you know, who lines up for the following week. But the thing is, you don't want to overdo it. There's a line here too, that if a pitcher, and it's hard to explain or quantify exactly where that line is, but sometimes you get double the punishment with the two-star pitcher. So I typically start the pitchers that are in my top 25 or 30 every week, no matter how many starts they have. And then it's the pitchers below that, unless they've got a really favorable matchup with one start, that I'm going to bench and then bring in a two-star guy. But again, it's not going to just be any two-star guy.
No, Scott made a good point a few days ago. He said, if it's a guy that you would never consider starting in a one-star week, you shouldn't consider starting him in a two-star week, generally speaking.
Well, I think that's true. You know, in week one, where you know, there's so many two-star pitchers.
Yeah, but I mean, like, if Kyle Kendrick is making two starts.
But I think there is a gray area where there are guys, and this is where matchups come in.
Yeah,
you know, somebody that I did this a lot with last year, and I could probably think of other examples, but Chris Young, when he was with the Mariners, comes to mind.
Okay.
Where if he had two home starts, mm-hmm. or two starts in good parks, or, you know, favorable matchups, somebody I don't think I ever would have started with one start in a standard league. But he was somebody I was looking for with two starts to see what the matchups were.
Yeah, I think two-star pitchers are easier to get away with in points leagues rather than categories or roto leagues. You guys agree? Just because it's pretty damn hard to have a negative point total, but it's not hard for them to hurt your ERA or your WHIP.
But there's an opportunity cost, again, if you're sitting a legitimate, say, number three starter with one start.
Yeah,
this is going to give you, you know, maybe 15 points.
And, right.
And the bigger opportunity cost, I feel like, is what you're giving up to pick up that guy in the week.
Yep.
Particularly since points league rosters are smaller.
Yeah.
And early in the season, you're worried about grabbing those unexpected breakouts before everybody else does. You just can't afford to spend a roster spot on a streaming option, I feel like.
What's your take on using relievers to lower your WHIP and ERA? Using more relievers than other owners would.
I think there's more value to it in like an AL and NL-only league than a mixed league. But it tends to become a bigger issue over the course of the season. Again, right now I feel like that's not the best use of roster space because there are always going to be low ERA and WHIP guys. Low ERA and WHIP relievers on waivers. It's not like you have to worry about somebody grabbing them all up before you can. I do that when I feel like that's really my only option for improving my pitching staff because all the good starters have been picked up already, and I don't really have a great trade scenario. So
yeah, it's. I think I almost exclusively employ that in very deep leagues like AL NL.
Talking to Tobin, and longtime podcast listeners know who Tobin is, this morning he said something very interesting. He said he's in a categories league. It is daily transactions, daily lineup. I don't think that really makes a difference in this scenario, but he said that a lot of guys in the league, they'll draft like six closers, and they'll basically punt wins and strikeouts. You know, they're going to lose that in a categories league. But their theory is if you win ERA, saves, and WHIP every week, you're going to win the league. And he said it's actually worked out. He says those guys have won the league. He doesn't think it's for that reason, that it's more coincidence that they've won the league, and he doesn't, you know, subscribe to the theory. But he said people hoard closers. They'll draft, you know, six, and it's not just middle relievers who are only getting you the two categories. It's closers, so you're getting three categories there. And you're probably going to win three out of five pitching categories every week. And it seems stupid to me at first. And I thought, I was like, actually, that's kind of interesting.
It's easier to do in like a league where, a head-to-head categories league, where the person who wins the most categories that week becomes 1-0, as opposed to, you know, he wins six of the 10 categories, and so his record becomes 6-4. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Also, you can't do it in a roto league because then you're getting ones in the wins and strikeouts.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like at 1 out of 12 possible.
Yeah,
points.
That's what I was gonna say. Is that's just there's no way that works unless you're very lucky.
But in a head-to-head categories league, it actually might work. It's kind of interesting.
I don't. I feel like there probably should be a rule to discourage that, like a weekly innings
floor or something, because that's just not. Closers should not be the most valuable players in your fantasy league. I just feel like that's not a good representation of real baseball at all.
Do you guys have any other tips for in-season roster management?
No, I mean, I feel like we've covered a lot of it is waivers, and then your roster decisions are just, I guess that is something we haven't talked too much about, is just how to manage the roster you actually have and long-term versus short-term. And I think I've been fairly extreme towards taking the long-term approach, especially over the first month and a half to 2 months of the season, riding out slumps. And I think even, in the middle of the season, you don't want to be completely knee-jerk. And some people are with that. I could probably stand to, loosen up a little bit and take a few more risks. I think over the years I've learned to do that a little bit, but... I do think a long-term approach does generally serve you best in picking your players each week.
And I'd say make trades. I think it's important. Buy low, sell high. If you have an established player who's off to a slow start, like if Adam Jones has a terrible April, there's really no reason why he wouldn't be able to turn it around. So
any trade that and I know it's kind of like fantasy 101 2-for-1 trades. Mm. The guy getting the one is coming out ahead, but
I don't think it's that obvious. I think you always hammer this home, and I think it's very well said.
Well, the thing is, if you can, particularly since there are issues beginning of the season and having enough roster space to pick up all the guys you want, anytime you can make a trade that both frees up roster space and improves your team's bottom line with the starting lineup by getting you a superior starter than what you're giving up, that's like helping you twice over, I feel like. So
for example, would you trade Adrian Beltre and Albert Pujols for Jose Abreu? Or is that too much?
That strikes me as a little too much, but it's not... I do think there's a scenario where it could be beneficial, even though on paper it looks like a loss. And I think maybe a better example would be, you see somebody who's starting like Pablo Sandoval at third base, and it helps especially if Sandoval gets off to a bad start. You have Adrian Beltre, you have Chris Bryan on your bench waiting to get called up, you trade Beltre and, maybe like Melky Cabrera for Jose Bautista.
Okay.
And, you're not really losing anything. You're having a big upgrade in the outfield, and you're freeing up a roster spot that could potentially become a big-time contributor himself. And that, if you make, particularly if you make several of those trades, maybe not all at once, but when you feel like a bench player has graduated that he deserves to be starting, and you just keep making those trades over and over again, that's really how you build an invincible team. It's hard to do in like expert leagues, because there's not that many people willing to make 2-for-1 trades, but not everybody listening is in expert leagues.
So. That's another thing, though, where you have to say league depth matters, right?
Yes.
I mean, if you're in a deep roto league or something.
Because a big key is there's interesting stuff on waivers that you want to be the one capitalizing on.
So the deeper the league, you don't necessarily want to trade 2-for-1. You want more depth, and you want it more spread out on your roster rather than just trying to get the best players and filling it in off the waiver wire. FanDuel, it's going to be a lot of fun. I did a little fantasy baseball FanDuel last year. I enjoyed it. I did a lot of fantasy football FanDuel and became addicted to it. So everybody get in on it now. Sign up now to play one-day fantasy baseball before the season kicks off. Go to FanDuel.com, FANDUEL.com, and we got an offer code for you to use. It's CBS. Use that offer code. First 50 people to use it, FanDuel is going to match your first deposit dollar for dollar up to $200 that gets earned as you play. FanDuel.com, offer code CBS. We'll come back to the week one hitting help and pitching help. Let's read a few emails here. Dear Nacho, Mike, and Jimmy. I'll look it up. Oh, this is from Jason in San Diego. Best guess for Dodgers saves while Kenley Jansen is out.
Oof.
Yeah, that's a guess.
You gonna force me to pick an actual player? I'll say Joel Peralta, but I think JP Howell could be just as likely.
I'm guessing nobody gets more than two saves before Kenley Jansen gets back. It'll be a couple different guys, and it's not gonna be long before he gets back.
I can't believe I didn't get that. It's a Better Call Saul or a Breaking Bad reference. Wow. Embarrassed. This is worse than the United Kingdom Great Britain thing.
Well, you're wrong about that. Shows where your priorities are.
Kenny from Massachusetts. Dear the amazing CBS fantasy baseball team. Is that us?
I think so.
I'll have to look it up. This question concerns managing one's time with the many daily and weekly tasks involved in running a fantasy baseball team. I've been playing fantasy baseball on and off for years. I've yet to find a really good system of watching baseball, looking at box scores and stats, reading player news, and finally making roster decisions. Can you please speak to your daily, weekly, and monthly routines for managing your fantasy baseball
team? Well, this is so unfair because this is our jobs.
Yeah, so, we can do a lot more than the average person can.
Yeah.
But we both played fantasy for a long time before we were doing this, and I would say the one biggest thing, if you have to choose one thing to do, take 15 minutes to half an hour every day to just go through the box scores. And particularly if you're in a one league guy, you kind of can streamline the process because you know which players are going to matter to you and which ones aren't. So I usually look at both what both the starting pitchers did. I look for players who got multiple hits. I look at players who hit home runs, extra base hits, and I move on to the next game. And that is the single most valuable thing I think you can do to stay plugged in on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. That's the top thing. And then, you know, find some time every few days maybe to, you know, scan some leaderboards. You know, if you're into the advanced stats, I think that they can be very helpful. I don't think it's as important as checking box scores and checking the news every day. But, few times a week, you know, kind of just tool around the leaderboards and see what looks unexpected there.
I would say a good once a week thing too is, I mean, if somebody stands out in a box score to pick up, you act on it immediately. But if, you know, to make sure nobody slips through the cracks, it's once a week, go to the roster trends page in your league, assuming it's the CBSSports.com league. I don't know that the other sites have it. But look at
most
free
added,
agents. The default view would be free agents. Look at most added and most owned. And see if
that's a good call,
because those are going to be the highest priority guys to add.
Yep, and also I'll add listen to the podcast because we pretty much do all of that for you.
Yeah,
And I see he talks in this email, asks us about organizational methods, which is I don't know that. Like I said, it's a part of our job. So I, you know, there's a lot of that I do now that I didn't do, 8 years ago. But if you have my phone, sometimes what I do is I'll take notes. Like I will do that scan of the leaderboards, and when I see something interesting, I won't necessarily act on it then, but I'll make a note of it, and then I'll have kind of a file in my phone, or you can use your laptop or tablet or whatever. You'll have a file of things that you can follow up on.
Yeah. So that's good stuff. Kenny from Massachusetts, thank you. Liam Mason from Penistone, UK says, lads, that was a hilarious podcast episode. I might could name 20 United States.
Well, that makes me feel better.
20 is pretty impressive, actually. I could only name like 32 or so.
Well, you see, Adam, I feel like everybody should know what's going on in the United States, because that's the attitude I have.
Yeah, perfect. I can name all 50, I'm pretty sure. My league starts 9 pitchers, two of which must be closers. Should I drop Tim Lincecum and pick up Luke Gregerson?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Here's, don't know this one, but don't know the name here. Let's say it's Mike. Hi, Edgar, Pablo, and Madison.
Not Bumgarner's.
Edgar Renteria, Pablo Sandoval, Madison Bumgarner. I'm going to guess these are the Giants World Series MVPs.
Lovely.
Oh, that's
yes.
Great.
You are 100% right.
Yeah.
I completely punted on catcher in my 10-team league. Who do you like better, Miguel Montero or Russell Martin?
I actually do like Montero better.
I like Martin better, but they're like, in a points league, they're like fallback option 1 and 1A.
because I feel like they're a little undervalued in that format because of their plate discipline.
A tweet from Michael Simaluka. Week one, 7 teams are home for 6 games. Philadelphia, the Yankees, the Marlins, the Reds, Brewers, Diamondbacks, and A's. What one player on those 7 teams is a must play?
On each of them?
I don't know.
Because if it's all of them, it's a lot of teams to kind of scan through. And
all right, who's a must play for the Phillies?
I'm not sure what the home part. They're not must plays because they are at home.
Well, it could be ballpark factor here, like 6 games in Philly, 6 games for the Yankees, 6 games at Marlins Park, 6 games for the Reds, Great American. Like, does that change anything for the week one hitting advice?
It does, but it's subtle. There's not going to be a player on every team that's home for in a good stadium that's going to become a must play because of it.
Well, are there any in this group? I mean, like Chase Utley, do you say, oh, you got to start him? He's home for six games. Brian McCann. That I don't know if that's, I don't know how much people stream catchers or whatever, but that's a guy who his home road splits were insane last year. So that could be
that's
big.
Probably as good an example as you're probably going to find.
What about Christian Yelich? That's bad for him being home for 6 games.
Do you know his splits off the top of your head? Because I
don't. But
I
Scott
don't.
Always went to that.
Okay, because I thought they weren't that. I thought they were all right.
Oh, maybe it was
Marlins Park.
I don't think he hits many home run. He hit many home runs at Marlins Park, but it's week one. You're not benching Christian Yelich. I feel like he was drafted as a starter in every league.
All right, Marlon Byrd, does he become an enticing option with nothing but home games in Cincinnati?
He's a more enticing option, but Cincinnati has one of the 5 worst matchups for this week, so that would be enough to negate that effect, I feel like.
All right, we'll get into that in a little bit then.
Yeah.
Josh Alderotti, is there any concern for a serious Corey Kluber regression this year? Any numbers that stand out that could elicit panic?
Not at all. I don't really worry about a Kluber regression because I thought 2 years ago his fantasy stats were so misleading that, the appearance of him taking this huge leap last year, there was certainly a leap. He got a lot better, but not as much as ERA would tell you that it did. So there might be a little regression, but just to the point where maybe he's a low-level ace instead of a high-level ace.
And if you watch him, he just looks so good. He's so legit, right?
Yeah.
By the way, Christian Yelich last year, he actually had a better batting average on base and slugging at home compared to the road. He had 6 more doubles and 6 more triples. All 6 of his triples came at home. But 7 home runs on the road, 2 at home.
Well, that's pretty much how you would expect it to play for him. So in a points league especially, which is where he's more valuable anyway, you wouldn't discount him just because he's at home.
Hey, Bob, Len, and Lomez. Who could be this season's Mike Fiers? That's from Yancey Yadkin from Big Tussle, Oklahoma.
How about Mike Fiers?
My favorite pick now is Zach McAllister. Him suddenly having an extra 4 miles per hour on his fastball. Granted, that's not the way Fiers broke out, but just that it could lead to a similar result in that he's a nobody who becomes a must start by season's end.
Did you get this out, Bob Lynn and Lomez?
It's a Seinfeld thing, right?
Yeah. It's Kramer's Friends.
Oh, okay.
I wish I knew Seinfeld better than I do. From Johnny, Casey McGee was great last year, and he's ranked so low. Why?
I think we're all expecting regression to varying degrees, and I'm going to go on a limb and say Scott probably more so than me. And I don't know. I'm guessing I have him ranked higher.
I think he's going to be a total scrub. So
I guess it's how you define scrub. I think he is startable in roto leagues, but he's kind of the last guy on your roster, kind of your $1 guy.
I think he was pretty much a total scrub in the second half last year. Like I feel like he already regressed to the mean, so I don't know why we're still on him.
If I remember correctly, he was hitting ridiculously well with runners in scoring position, and he was driving in a lot of runs, and that was pretty much the only thing giving Casey McGee value last year, and then it went away.
Well, not he didn't strike out a whole lot, and for most of the year he had a very good batting average that really didn't erode too much until I think about the last quarter of the season. So I think there was more good there than a lot of people think. I think, you know, than Scott, I think there was more good than maybe you, than what you saw. But, you know, I also kind of feel like we're splitting hairs because it's not, yeah. I think I'm starting him in one league out of my 13. So
a couple more from Cameron. Grade the trade. My Andrew Miller and Michael Wacha for his DeGrom and Pomerantz Roto daily lineup with holds. So giving up Wacha and Andrew Miller for DeGrom and Pomerantz. Interesting.
Yeah. And I think I actually answered this one on Twitter. I don't like it, because it's a holds league.
But you're getting DeGrom. That's the best player, right?
Yes, but I don't think he's that much better than Wacha.
I think it's a pretty even trade. I do prefer the DeGrom side, but you know, the fact that it's a roto league does tip it more on the other side's favor. So I'll give it a C+.
I wonder what Cameron thinks of Jock Peterson.
Way to not give it a grade, Al.
C-.
Ashton Gilmore, for late drafts, how much should first week stats play into your strategy? So if you haven't, if you're drafting after week one.
Oh, I've never done that before, so I can't speak from experience.
I can't imagine the scenario where it would have any impact for me.
I think it would change the late rounds of the drafts. Like the guys that you'd pick up in week one after they got off to a good start would become draftable.
I can imagine one scenario, and it's somebody, I'm thinking like a Jake Lamb if he wins a job, or Nick Ahmed, you know, if they totally bomb and their status is in question. That's the only situation where I could see that impacting me.
If a guy like Mookie Betts got off to a hot start, I could see people like taking him in like the fourth round.
Yeah.
And I'm going
to
let them.
Like the breakout guys, if they get off to big starts,
yeah.
I could see people going nuts over it. But all right, here we go. Week one hitting advice. Can you do it in 3 minutes?
Sure. Okay. I think so.
Because I want to do 3 minutes of hitting, 3 minutes of pitching. Now, look, we got columns up on the website. So
not yet.
We will, though.
Oh, yeah.
So when? By the end of the day?
Yes.
By the end of today, Friday, we will have columns up on the website. So anything we don't cover here, head on over to the website. Take a look at the two-star pitchers in your league. They are separated by all players and free agents. So you probably want to look at the free agents to see who you could pick up. We have a cool new feature this year that tells you their stats in the last 3 starts that they've made. It appears to be broken right now because no stats are showing up. Just kidding.
Nah.
No starts have been made. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
But here we go. I want to do some MLB predictions. Get your picks for the divisions, the playoffs, fun stuff. First, Scott, tell us what we need to know about hitters in week one.
All right, yeah, I'll keep this brief because I don't want to spoil the column, but I'll go through the best matchups and worst matchups first of all. I like the Athletics most, followed by the Brewers, Red Sox, Braves, and Giants. Of those teams, the Athletics and Giants play 7 games. They're 2 of 4 teams that play 7. The other all play 6. But the other 2 teams that play 7, their matchups aren't so great. The worst matchups, I have the Mets, Twins, Cardinals, Reds, that I mentioned earlier, and the Mariners. They're all 6 game weeks. I obviously the Athletics being the best matchups, I like Marcus Semien a lot. He's really, I think in a mixed league scenario, though, he might be the only Athletic I go for. I like Stephen Vogt a lot, especially since it's 5 left right-handers if he already had catcher eligibility, but he doesn't, so we're not going to worry about him. Kind of an under-the-radar sleeper for this week. I mentioned the Braves had the 4th best matchups. Eric Young, who's coming off a good spring, looks like he's going to be the everyday center fielder and think bat leadoff and steals bases, right? The Braves matchups specifically are against Henderson Alvarez, Matt Latos, Tom Kohler, Jonathan Neese, Dylan Gee, and Bartolo Colon, a bunch of pitch-to-contact types. Well, if Eric Young's making contact, he has a better-than-usual chance of getting on base, and when he gets on base, he could run a lot, especially since the catchers he's facing are Jared Saltalamacchia and Travis d'Arnaud, probably 2 of the worst at throwing out base runners. In the majors, so
that's cool.
I'm thinking it could be a 4 or 5 steal week for Eric Young, potentially, in a good scenario. So I like him as kind of a deep sleeper.
Nice.
Some players I don't like. I would not be thrilled to start Shin-Soo Choo coming off spring where he hit 171, or at least is right now. I didn't mention the Rangers as the worst matchups, but they do have bad matchups. The second worst pitcher they're facing is like Jesse Hahn and then Kendall Graveman before that. So it's a bunch of tough pitchers, even though no true aces. And obviously coming off an injury-plagued year, a bad spring, it's particularly in three outfielder leagues. I just don't think you need to mess with him right now. Mike Zunino in one catcher leagues, he's getting a lot of hype based on the spring he's having, but I did mention the Mariners among the worst matchups. And so with his high strikeout rate, especially one catcher league, he wasn't in my top 12 to begin with, but I don't think this is the week to like force him in. Let's see him get some regular season time, see if that spring breakthrough carries over, and wait until he has some good matchups before benching our starter for him.
Let's do two-star pitchers, Al. Starter sit, John Lester, who could be a little pitch count limited on Sunday night at the home against the Cardinals, and then at Colorado in his second start. What do you think, John Lester?
Nah, I think you got to start him.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just thought I'd be dramatic. Would you ever look at a guy like Phil Hughes, who is facing, he's slated to face David Price and Chris Sale, and say he's going to get two losses?
No, it's risky. I would certainly be a little less inclined to start Hughes. In a shallow league, I think actually it's defensible. When I say shallow league, I'm talking like 8, maybe 10 teams. Mm-hmm. But in a 12-team league, I do think you need to take your chances. I think it probably for a while still now, I'm going to have to convince people that Hughes is better than you think he is, and that last year was not a fluke, and he could even possibly be better than he was last year. So there's a lot of pitchers with tough matchups, a lot of ace versus ace this week. Everybody's running similar risks where, yeah. You may have to, in a two-start week, you may take a loss or two, and I think you just have to run those guys out there.
Boy, Henderson Alvarez, I mean, he's 88% owned right now, 71% started. That'll change. He's got the Braves and the Rays both at home. He could have a big week. Those are some bad lineups.
He could, and I love Alvarez in points leagues. It could be a very big week for him in points leagues. Quality starts, innings, he could pile those things up.
Drew Hutchison at the Yankees at Baltimore, start or sit?
Borderline. I am starting him in the league where I have him, so five starting pitching slots.
I'm nervous about starting Clay Buchholz at the Phillies and at the Yankees.
Yeah, not bad matchups, but I would make him a sit this week. Because, again, remember, it's almost exclusively aces that are going, so you're not going to have very many waiver wire options, but on your roster, chances are you've got two solid two-star pitchers already there. You don't need to cram Buchholz in for the extra start.
So who would you then, from on the list I've given you or that you're looking at,
yeah,
below Buchholz, we're talking about guys who are owned in less than 70% of leagues. You Gallardo, Loesch, Peavy, Colmenter, Cologne. Who would you consider this week?
Yeah, not very many of them for the exact reason that I just cited, that unless you went really hitter heavy, your first two pitchers are probably going to have two starts this week. There's a very good chance. So you don't need to stretch to get those extra starts. So below the Buchholz line, actually the only one, and this is somebody that made my bust list, but I like him this week, Jesse Hahn, who's got the Rangers at home. And then he does oppose the Mariners. He's probably going to face against Felix Hernandez. But, still, I think that start against Texas is a good matchup for him, and, should at least be in the black for that start against the Mariners. So,
Al,
yeah,
my man, why not Kyle Loesch? Home against Colorado, home against
Pittsburgh. Oh, no, I apologize. I overlooked him because okay. I actually am starting Loesch.
Okay.
In the one league where I drafted him.
Okay. Jake Peavy, we just haven't really talked about him much. He was pretty good after the trade to the Giants. He's 52% owned, and he's got two starts. Has he been on your radars at all, guys? Peavy?
No, he hasn't been, but he's probably of the same level as Willie Peralta, who I referred to earlier as somebody I felt like I had to resort to in the last round of this latest head-to-head draft we did. So, He'd be a guy who, if I drafted him, I'd be willing to drop him for the
flavor of the week type.
Can I just real quickly, and I know we're trying to pack stuff in, but one star pitchers, a few things that you should realize, because it is a lot of ace versus ace. Teams that are stacked with pitching, starting pitching, namely the Nationals and the Mets, you are going to have some great pitchers making only one starts this week. We've got a DeGrom versus Zimmerman matchup. So even though they're only making one start, and even though they're only facing each other, I think you gotta take the flyer and start them. You got Harvey versus Strasburg, which you already mentioned. I'd be okay with starting Harvey this week, unless it was really shallow. Very shallow league. Zach Greinke versus Tyson Ross. I view Ross as sort of borderline this week because of all the good two star pitchers. So if you're pitching heavy, I could see sitting Tyson Ross, but I think I'd start Greinke no matter what.
I'm making a little chart here, as I did last year, to keep our picks for the rest of the season, even though yours are on the website. I don't get that wonderful honor. I haven't made picks yet. I'm going to do them on the fly. And based on what happens in baseball every year, I'm sure they will be just as accurate as they would have been if I had actually given this some thought. So last year I picked the Cardinals over the Rays in the World Series. That didn't work out so well.
Mm-mm.
Scott, let's start with you.
Mm-hmm.
AL, East, Central, West, and two wild cards.
All right. AL is the tough league because I feel like there's at least three teams in every division that could win the division. In the Central, I would say there's four. I decided to play it safe in the East and go with the Orioles over the Red Sox, even though I think the Red Sox have the most upside. They have a pitching problem, but they could trade for it, or they have good prospects to promote on that side. But I take the Orioles because I think there's little chance they miss the playoffs. I take the Tigers in the Central, sticking with them. Even though they're older, I still think the middle of their lineup is stacked relative to the other teams. And their pitching staff isn't as bad as people are letting on because they got Price to fill the Scherzer void. And I like Shane Green, even if Alfredo Simon doesn't live up to it. I like Shane Green at the back end there. West, I'm taking the Mariners because I feel like they have the least downside of the best three teams there, the others being the Angels and Athletics. So it's kind of just playing it safe there with that pick, too, I feel.
And so you're going Baltimore, Detroit, Seattle.
Yeah.
Two wild cards?
Two wild cards. I do have the Red Sox in as a wild card, and I have the Indians in. And I might be under... If Zach McAllister's as good as I'm hoping he's being, there's a good chance the Indians beat out the Tigers for the division, but planning a little more cautiously there. I do like the top of their pitching staff regardless with Kluber and Carlos Carrasco.
Baltimore, Detroit. And wait, did we do AL West yet? I'm doing my picks. So
yeah,
I
picked Seattle.
Seattle and the AL West. And who are your wild cards? Detroit, Cleveland and who?
Boston.
Boston and Cleveland. Okay, Al?
All right, so I also have Baltimore in the East. I think it's going to be a lot of teams between 85 and 75 wins, but I think, Scott, you had said that you just see the least downside there with mm-hmm. the Orioles. I think the lineup is maybe aside from Toronto's the best in the division, and I think their pitching is better top to bottom.
So Baltimore?
Baltimore.
Okay. AL Central.
Central, I'm going with the Indians. I'm actually pretty confident with this one.
What? I don't see it, guys. I don't see it with the Indians.
And I think their pitching top to bottom is better than Detroit's. The Tigers, again, if everybody's healthy and everything goes right, they could win the division. But I just don't feel like I have to qualify the Indians' chances. I think they've got a good lineup.
Yeah, they almost made the playoffs lineup last year, and that was with Carlos Carrasco just coming in for 10 starts at the end. So,
I don't know.
There's a lot. I mean, if you count on Kluber and Carrasco to perform, at an ace or near ace level, there's a lot of upside
all
beyond
right.
that
all
still
right,
in the
fine.
Pitching staff.
It's fine. It's a good pick. It's a good pick.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank
I'm
you.
Not picking them, but it's a good pick.
And then I also have the Mariners in the West. I think actually by a pretty good margin. I don't really understand how the Angels did as well as they did. Sorry, I'm going to have to do this.
Is that right? Very upset about the Angels.
So, yeah. So I don't know how they dip out and expect the Angels to repeat. So Mariners with the upgrades that they've made. And
I feel like the Angels lineup is basically Trout and Pujols.
Yeah.
Yeah,
They were the highest scoring team in the majors last year. I know they lost Howie Kendrick.
Cole Calhoun's a good player.
Yeah, that's true. I forgot about him, but he's definitely.
But it's not like you go around the league and you pick teams top threes. It's not like Cole Calhoun makes it a powerhouse trio, And then
right. And
then there's the rest of the lineup, and I think Freeze could have a bounce back season, but I still think there's some big holes there. They're probably not going to get a lot of production from second.
I'm hopeful for Crone.
Yeah.
But even I think the Angels are going to have a big trade at some point.
I guess, but they don't have prospects to trade. I like Crone as like a sixth or seventh. Like, he was the sixth or seventh best hitter on the team. He would make that team's lineup better, but it's the fourth best. We're counting on him for that.
Okay.
I mean, Trout has to be really good.
They should have a pretty good bullpen, though, right?
I think so, yeah.
I'm picking them to win the West, but I understand your skepticism.
They totally could win the West. I'm not discounting the possibility.
And your wild cards?
And my wild cards are the Angels, somewhat reluctantly, but I think there's enough there to put them in second in the West. But I actually think you could have two wild cards from the Central, but they might beat up on each other enough. That's the thing, is the West is a weaker division. I think the A's can pile up some interdivisional wins there. But I do think the Tigers emerge. The Central is a wild card team, but I could see the White Sox or the Royals potentially sneaking in over the Angels.
So Scott and Al both have Baltimore, Cleveland, Detroit, and Seattle making the playoffs, whether that's winning the division or wild card. The difference right now, Al has the Angels in, and Scott has the Red Sox in as wild cards. I'll also take Baltimore in the AL East. Their over-under win total has shot up, I think, like one or two wins because everybody was betting the over, but it was like it was around 82. Not a lot of faith in them, and I think people thought that was crazy. Mm. Kansas City, I have winning the AL Central. It is kind of a crapshoot, but I think the Royals hitters are just going to have to be better this year. Like they were disappointing last year. They'll be better. Angels to win the West. Tigers wild card, Mariners wild card. Go ahead with your NL picks, Al Melchior. We got about 2 minutes left.
Okay, Nationals and the NL East. Don't think that requires a lot of discussion. Everybody's on board with them. In the Central, I've got the Pirates. I think it'll be a real dogfight between them and the Cardinals. I love the lineup that they've got, and pitching has got a few more question marks, but. I do worry about the Cardinals, particularly the rotation depth. I'm not sure Wainwright's going to be an ace this year. So I've got the Pirates first there. And then in the West, I've got the Dodgers. I think all those teams have some weaknesses. I think the Dodgers have the fewest.
Dodgers? Okay.
Yeah.
So Washington, Pittsburgh, Dodgers. That's exactly what I'm doing for the division winners. Who are your wild cards?
I've got the Mets, actually. Real close. I think the Mets, the Marlins are going to have a real fight for second in that division. I like the Mets pitching better. And I don't think their offense is too far off the pace with the Marlins either. But I really worry about kind of the domino effect if Jared Cozart misses time. I don't think the Marlins have a lot of depth there pitching. And they're sorely going to need Jose Fernandez when he comes back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I've got the Mets there. And then I've got the Cardinals as my other wild card team.
Washington, Pittsburgh, Dodgers, Cardinals, and Mets to make the playoffs for Al. Scott.
All right. Well, I think the easiest division winners in all of baseball are the Nationals and the Dodgers, and I'm not going to get cute there. They're my East and West winners. The Central, I have the Cardinals winning it. I feel like there's the least downside with them. Their rotation and lineup are both good. And potentially great, the lineup. I have the Cubs finishing second and the Pirates finishing third. And I originally had intended to pick the Pirates winning the division too, because I feel like they have a lot of players with a lot of upside and even more on the way. But I compare their rotation side by side with the Cubs, and the Cubs is better. And I feel like
you know, everybody's taking the Cubs lineup for granted, and they're wondering about the pitching staff. And the pitching staff's looking pretty good, too, with Lester. If you buy into Arrieta, Lester and Arrieta at the top, followed by Hamill and
Kyle Hendricks.
Kyle Hendricks, yeah, I'll take that over the Pirates' top four. And I do feel like the Cubs lineup is going to take a big step forward. So I have them. I have both teams as my and making the playoffs as wild cards, but the Cubs ahead. I know it's hard for both wild card winners to come from the same division, but it does happen sometimes. I think the Reds are going to have to be in for a bad year for that to happen. But I kind of see that happening. The Reds being better than their record's going to show because all the good teams in their division are going to beat up on them.
All right, so who's in winning the NL West?
I said the Dodgers.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I was doing my picks. So.
Yeah.
Washington, St. Louis, Dodgers, Cubs, and Pirates. For Al, it was Washington, Pittsburgh, Dodgers, Cardinals, and Mets. So Al's got the Mets and the Al's got the Mets in, and Scott is the Cubs in, basically. That's the big difference there. I'll go Washington, Pittsburgh, Dodgers, just like Al. I'll take St. Louis, just like Al, and I'll take the Marlins. Not like Al or Scott.
None of us taking the Padres, which may be a bad call because the two of the worst teams in baseball are in the West, so it seems likely a wild card could come out of there.
But none of us are taking the Giants either to make the playoffs. They just won the World Series.
Yeah.
That's kind of crazy.
Odd year.
Odd year, yeah.
I don't know who's going to win the AL, so I just pick Kansas City. I'll take the Nationals to beat the Royals in the World Series. Al?
I've got the Nationals over the Indians.
I have the Nationals over the, trying to remember, Orioles. Nationals over the Orioles.
Boy, just the idea of Kluber Carrasco in a playoff series, short playoff series.
Being two of the worst pitchers in that series against the Nationals.
Well, I mean, getting to that point.
Yeah, no, that'd be cool. But
so you picked the Nationals too?
Yeah.
That would mean Heath too picked the Nationals. Heath and I actually picked the same World Series, Nationals and Orioles, and we did that in our own separate quarters.
It's kind of hard to imagine the Orioles. We're going long here, but whatever. Unless they get
2 days in a row.
Unless they get an ace. Like, they would have to have one of the worst pitching staff.
I hear what you're saying.
Pitching rotations to because their bullpen should be good, but pitching rotations to get to the World Series.
If I'm being honest, and I know this probably isn't in the spirit of the predictions, I'm picking them from the AL primarily because they're the AL team I'm most confident in making the playoffs, so I have a better chance of being right with my AL champion.
Look,
by picking them.
They could easily end up with Johnny Cueto at some point this season. You know, they'll go for it. No.
Yeah.
But I don't.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe they need Gausman to step up too. Hey, quick question. Do you think Carlos Carrasco could pull that off innings-wise? Pitch a full season and then deep into the playoffs? Or is there some type of restriction there?
That's a good question that I'm not prepared to answer at this point. So,
I think he could do it, but we'd all be worried about him next year if he did.
Absolutely.
Well, that's going to do it for today's show. Good luck, everybody. Thanks a lot for being with us throughout spring training. We've got so much more for you. Starting on Monday morning, we'll have a Cubs-Cardinals game to recap and plenty more from the weekend. So, Scott White, thanks.
Thank you, Adam.
Al Melchior, thank you.
Thank you, Adam.
Thank you all for listening. Have a great weekend. I'm Adam Melchior.